Welcome to Dementia Matters, a podcast created by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. It's our goal to humanize Alzheimer's research so that our community, our patients, our participants, and anyone else interested can get a better understanding of the work that's happening to fight back against this disease. My name is Nathaniel Chin, and I'm a geriatric memory clinic physician at the University of Wisconsin. I'm also the family member and son of someone with dementia. I'll be serving as your host for this podcast and asking the questions I believe are in the minds of many in our community. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Dementia Matters. I'm here with Dr. Samantha Allison. Dr. Allison obtained her PhD at Washington University in St. Louis, where she focused on testing at the earliest possible stages of memory change, specifically looking at spatial abilities. Dr. Allison works at the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center as a research associate, as well as on the RAP study, RAP standing for Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention. Dr. Allison, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the only way we know if someone has Alzheimer's disease is through an autopsy, at least currently. And this is the definitive and gold standard method. But really, this is not helpful to those living with Alzheimer's disease and currently going through this disease. Now, you study Alzheimer's disease in people who are living, and we've come a long way in the last few years in studying people living with Alzheimer's. So we know a lot more about Alzheimer's because of brain imaging and looking at the same pathology or abnormal process that can be found on autopsy. Is that right?
That's correct.
So can you describe the major features of a brain with Alzheimer's disease at their autopsy?
Yes. So I think an important thing to keep in mind is the brain is made up of neurons, and those are cells that receive, process, and transmit information. In individuals with Alzheimer's disease, they have brains with fewer neurons. So at autopsy, when we weigh the brain, it weighs less than an individual without Alzheimer's disease. And this is due to shrinkage. It's lighter. It's less dense.
Do you think a person could actually, just looking at a brain, know the difference between a healthy brain and one with Alzheimer's? Is it that obvious?
I wouldn't say it's that obvious in terms of knowing whether someone has Alzheimer's disease. There's a lot of different things that can cause your brain to shrink over time, such as smoking or some health-related issues as well, like having cardiovascular disease. I do think looking at a brain from the naked eye, you'd be able to tell, provided you've looked at enough brains and have a baseline, that that brain might have some pathology or might be abnormal in some way because it's physically smaller than a normal brain. The next step is the pathologist cuts up the brain, examines it eye level, and then later takes it to a microscope to look at some of the pathology that might be related to Alzheimer's disease or other diseases.
Okay, so in Alzheimer's, what would they see under the microscope?
So in Alzheimer's disease, typically they're looking for the presence of what we call two toxic proteins that are thought to be related to the loss of neurons, and those are beta amyloid and tau. And so amyloid occurs basically because abnormal levels of a naturally occurring protein clump together to form plaques, and these plaques collect between neurons and then disrupt their ability to communicate with each other. And then the other thing that they're looking for are the presence of neurofibrillary tangles. These tangles form when tau, which is normally used to stabilize a part of the cell that helps with transport of materials within the cell, detaches, clumps together, and then forms these tangles inside the neuron, again making it difficult for it to communicate with other neurons.
Some of the things I took away from that was that amyloid is actually normal. We make it in our brains. It's normally cleared, but it happens to be stuck in our brain in Alzheimer's. But it also sounds like you're saying this is the start of the process that leads to Alzheimer's disease.
So that's one hypothesis, that first we see changes in this amyloid, that they clump together and form these plaques, which then triggers, or at least that's the hypothesis idea, to the formation of these tangles. And then they think that those are the two processes that then start this cascade of events that eventually lead to the neurons shrinking and not being able to communicate over time.
Okay. And then when you talk about this protein called tau, what I am intrigued by is it's a normal protein inside the neuron, and something happens and all of a sudden it just, it's no longer doing its usual thing.
Mm-hmm. It detaches from this part of the cell that we call the microtubules. The microtubules are an important part of the cell. They help with the transport of materials within the cell. What stabilizes the microtubules is the tau protein. So the metaphor I like to use is train tracks. In a normal brain, the train tracks are stabilized, they're going straight. In a brain with Alzheimer's disease, they disintegrate, and so you're not able to take the materials in and out using this train.
Oh, I like that analogy. So then knowing what amyloid and tau are, how do they relate to brain shrinkage?
And so the big part is that with amyloid, because these proteins are clumping together and they're collecting between the neurons, that disrupts their ability to communicate. With tau, same kind of idea. This disintegration of the microtubules, again, makes it difficult for cells to communicate. When they can't communicate, eventually what happens is the neurons die.
Okay, so shrinkage equals neurons dying.
Correct.
So then, how can we see this happening in a living person?
So as you said before, typically for years and years and years, the only way we could look at these changes was through an autopsy under a microscope. What's great today is we have a lot of new innovative techniques using imaging that allows us to look at these changes in an individual who's living. And so the two ways that we can do that is through a structural MRI. And with that, we take pictures of the brain. And with specialized software, we can get an estimate of the brain volume. So we'd expect, for example, that individuals with Alzheimer's disease would have lower volumes compared to individuals without the disease. And then in terms of looking at some of these neuropathological processes, we can use something called a PET scan. And one of the PET scans we have here at the ADRC and with RAP is able to look at amyloid in individuals who are cognitively normal and don't have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And the way that PET scan works is that individuals get injected with a tracer, they have a scan, and then we're able to see how much amyloid and where amyloid is deposited in the brain.
Okay, so we now can see things in the brain that we used to only be able to see on autopsy. But you're starting to find that we are seeing these changes even before a person has symptoms. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's an interesting part of what we're beginning to learn about the disease. Before, we used to think that the disease started when people, for example, were having trouble with their memory, or were getting lost, or were having difficulties communicating. And now what we know about the disease is the changes that are thought to cause those symptoms are occurring anywhere from maybe 2 or 10 years prior to getting that diagnosis and seeing those symptoms.
Wow. So not only do we now know that disease is building up a decade possibly before symptoms, but we can actually visualize that with these new technologies.
Yes.
Well, now I can see why your research is really taking off. Speaking of which, now you were just involved in our Alzheimer's Disease Research Day, and you won an award for having such an excellent poster. Now, the title of your poster was The Relationship Between Amyloid Deposition and Both Global and Hippocampal Atrophy. So you were looking at whether baseline amyloid deposition or presence is associated with whole brain and hippocampal atrophy over time. And I'll clarify that hippocampal means the memory center of the brain.
Correct.
So what did you find?
So we were really interested in this question because going back to that hypothesis I talked about before, which is we expect amyloid deposition to start first, then followed by the formation of neurofibrillary tangles, and finally changes in brain volume, both in the hippocampus and then global volume overall. And so we found that individuals who had amyloid deposition at baseline, about 4 years later, they were showing greater decline in the whole brain over time, but we were not seeing changes with the hippocampus.
So having this protein called amyloid in the brain led to or is related to shrinkage of the whole brain, but not the memory center.
Correct.
Well, what does that mean for us?
So it's interesting because a lot of the research before has shown actually greater atrophy in the hippocampus over time in other research studies. Why we're seeing this discrepancy in our study remains to be seen. Part of it might be that we have a younger cohort than a lot of the other studies. So maybe we see greater brain atrophy or shrinkage in the earlier stages and the hippocampus kind of speeds up maybe later in the course of the disease or when you're older, for example.
I see. So are you going to continue to study these people throughout their course then?
Yes, especially since we're getting more PET scans or scans looking at that amyloid deposition, and we're getting more structural MRIs, which again gives us those estimates of volume.
So if we were to know if amyloid was in our brain, do you think that's possible we could then make different decisions, lifestyle decisions, that would try to keep our brains bigger, knowing that they could be shrinking over time?
I definitely think that some of the research that has come out has suggested that maybe lifestyle changes might mitigate the impact of amyloid on, for say, your memory and thinking abilities. But whether people want to change or not might be an individual choice, and people differ in motivation.
True. But at least this information could lead to that. Thank you, Dr. Allison, for joining us today on Dementia Matters. We do hope to have you back when you have more results.
Thank you. It was great being here.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including a grant from the National Institutes of Health for Alzheimer's Disease Centers. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazaleski and edited by Zoe Rugel. Our musical jingle is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at WisconsinADRC. If you have any questions or comments, email us at dementiamatters@medicine.wisc.edu. Thanks for listening.